content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Let's start with an article from AARP, the magazine. This is 70. Checking in with John Larroquette. The star of the 1980s mega hit Night Court talks about the revival of that show and looks back over a long career. Q. Question. Turning 75 hasn't seemed to slow you down. Answer. I was sort of ready to. I was doing a show in New York when COVID hit, so I came back to L.A. and sort of made up my mind that, well, if they want me back, that's fine. If not, I'm not going to worry about it. Next question. It's still not easy to be an actor past 70. Answer. Well, you know, the road does get narrower. Question. When Night Court was revived, great timing, right? Answer. I have unending gratitude for the amount of work I have been able to do, and this is maybe a nice way to cap it off. Question. Has Dan Fielding mellowed? Answer. He still thinks he's the smartest person in the room. He is not quite as insecure as he was as a young man. He's gone through a lifetime and realized he has survived things that he's still able to get up every day. And another little item under the heading of family, four ways to win over teenage grandchildren. Sometimes, okay, often, teens can act distant and aloof. Don't respond in kind. They benefit from having you in their lives, whether they know it or not. Making that happen is up to you. Here's what I advise. Constantly cultivate. Call your grandchildren regularly and speak just to them. This reinforces the idea that you have a special relationship outside their parents. Get interested in their interests. If your grandchild is into video games, ask to learn how to play. Watch the movies or TV shows they love. It may be awkward at first, but if you want a relationship, you're sometimes going to have to be willing to meet them on their terms. One-on-one time. Get them to agree to go to a movie, a board game, or even just finding a minute to sit in their bedroom together to catch up. Or tell family stories. Teenage kids are curious about their family's past and what their parents' and grandparents' lives were like when they were teens. Reel them in with stories that will help them learn more about their ancestors. And here's a fun 50s fad. Hula hoops were swinging nicely in 1958. Whammo, popularizer of the hip hoop, turns 75 this year. And under the heading of fashion, a spring in your step. Sure-footed shoes for a new season. This spring's trendy shoes align perfectly with older feet. They are as comfortable as they are stylish. Here's what to look for. Cushioning. Brands from sporty Vans, $60 to $80, to tailored Cole Haan, $90 to $100, deliver padded soles called Comfy Cush and Cloud Feel. Birdies, $120 to $165, touts layers of quilted comfort in every footbed. Boxier toes. Seasonal options like Amazon's Belize Ballet Flats at $20 and Viviana's Knit Loafers at $97 offer a range of prices. Bunion sufferers comment on their wearability. And for thicker soles, sneakers deliver street chic and bold colors like those in celebrity collaborations with Reebok and Adidas, $100 to $175. Arizona loves Trekkie sandals, $60 and up, and Teva's original universal collection, $55 to $85, have a thick, gridded base for superior traction. Now we know. Now let's look at a money saver article. Find your best bank. Should you keep your cash where it is already, or should you move your account? Here are five essential factors to consider, and this is by Sharon Waters. Over the years, banks in the U.S. have dramatically changed how they operate and what services they offer, but their main function remains the same for most households: to serve as a hub for everyday cash flow. Paycheck received? Right into your bank account. Bills to be paid? Right from your bank account. Cash needed for the weekend? Right out of your bank's ATM. Given the importance of all that cash flow, you would think we would be picky about our bank. But it's the opposite. Americans age 55 and up have been using their current checking account for an average of about 25 years, according to a 2021 bank rate study. One of the top reasons respondents give for sticking, it's the same account I've always had. There are better criteria for deciding where to keep an account. While the interest rates you earn on deposits or pay on loans may be important, here are five other factors to consider. Maintenance fees. If a bank charges you a monthly fee for your account, those dollars can add up. The most common monthly charge is $12, according to Bankrate, or $144 a year. The average minimum balance you need in an account to get monthly charges waived is about $540. So, if you're paying a high monthly fee for your account, you might want to look for an account elsewhere, or maybe an account at your current bank with a different fee structure. You could be required to use direct deposit or link a savings account, or you may have to pay to receive a paper statement. Certain states require banks to offer lifeline low-fee accounts, and the nonprofit Cities for Financial Empowerment Fund is now encouraging banks to provide what are known as bank-on accounts, low-cost accounts that meet certain standards, such as requiring a minimum opening balance of $25 or less. To find a bank near you that offers these low-fee accounts, visit joinbankon.org/accounts. 2. Penalties. Penalty fees include charges for overdrafts or for using an out-of-network ATM. Banks raked in an estimated $15.5 billion in overdraft and non-sufficient funds revenue in 2019, according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. In the face of CFPB concerns about overdraft fees, some banks have eliminated them altogether. That's worth asking about. We can't necessarily plan for a pandemic or layoffs, says Rachel Gittleman, Financial Services Outreach Manager for the Consumer Federation of America, so make sure that your bank's fee structure works for both now and for more difficult times, she says. Banks are required to disclose their fees. You can search online for the bank's name and fees to find them on bank websites. Then compare different banks' charges that might affect you. 3. Branches. The older you are, the more likely you are to bank in person. But the number of bank branches in the U.S. has declined for a decade, from more than 85,000 in 2011 to around 72,000 in 2021. If going to a branch is important to you, consider whether most of your visits are to a few nearby locations or whether you want to be able to bank anywhere in your state, your region, or across the country. You can search for the bank's name and find a branch or ATM to see what's near you. Credit union members can access more than 5,400 branches and 30,000 fee-free ATMs nationally through Co-op, a network of credit unions. Even as the overall number of branches is on the decline, some banks are expanding their networks in certain cities. You can access a bank's commitment to your area, or lack thereof, by seeing if it has shut branches recently or instead seems to be investing in the in-store locations, says Gittleman. You might also wish to visit a branch to see what services it offers and to get a sense of how attentive it is to its customers. Technology. If in-person banking isn't a priority, or if no bank branches are particularly convenient to where you live, well-designed remote banking technology will make your life easier. Don't want to travel to a branch to deposit checks? Many banks now have apps that let you make a deposit from your living room. It's as simple as taking a picture of a check with a phone or tablet. Tired of writing a rent check every month? You may be able to schedule automatic monthly payments. Like keeping a close eye on your bank balance? Get a text notification after every transaction. Think about how you plan to interact with your bank and make sure that the financial institution that you choose has all of those options available, says Gittleman. Since it can be difficult to access a bank's technology if you don't already have an account there, your best bet is to ask family and friends what they think of the tech at their banks. And finally, number 5, special services. Hate waiting in line? Some banks let customers line up digitally before getting to the branch. Need cash but don't have your debit card? Some institutions let you withdraw money from an ATM by entering your PIN into a mobile wallet. Banks are also using artificial intelligence to make online chats feel more conversational, says Amanda Swanson, a senior director at Cornerstone Advisors, a banking consultant firm. Look for special features that address your circumstances and ask people you know about what services stand out at their bank. People who have lower credit or thin file credit may have a better chance of being approved for a mortgage or other loan if the bank evaluates cash flow data instead of pulling a credit report while reviewing their application. If you have more assets, a bank might offer wealth management services at a reduced cost or an interest rate discount on a mortgage. The author of this piece, Sharon Waters, a former CPA, has written for the Washington Post and other publications. So we have 2 little sidebar articles with this one. Change your bank in 4 easy steps if you decide to switch banks. 1. Open the new account. Be sure to get the bank's 9-digit routing number, which you will need for direct deposits. 2. Fill out the paperwork to switch any paycheck direct deposits or other regular payments to your new account. 3. Once you know when deposits hit the new account, switch your automatic debits from the old account. 4. Before closing your old account, verify that all checks have cleared and no outstanding automatic payments remain. And how safe is your money when it's in the bank? 2 high-profile failures earlier this year raise an important question. The collapse in March of 2 major U.S. banks, the 2nd and 3rd largest bank failures in history, may have made you wonder, will I lose money if my bank fails? Good news, you're protected up to a limit. The government's Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, guarantees $250,000 per depositor, per deposit category, per insured bank. Credit unions have similar protections. So, if both you and your spouse have checking accounts at the same bank, each is insured for up to $250,000. If you also share a joint account at that bank, that too is insured for $500,000, $250,000 for each co-owner. Insurance covers checking and savings accounts, certificates of deposit, and money orders. Not covered is mutual fund and other investments sold at a bank, stock in the bank itself, and contents of safe deposit boxes. Now, last time we were looking at an article in AARP, The Bulletin, the cover story, which is Protect Yourself. And this is Protect Yourself Part 2. Do these things today to reduce the chances of losing money or sleep to scams? Mailbox. Informed Delivery is a free service for the U.S. Postal Service. The agency emails photos of letter-size mail expected to be delivered to you that day or shortly after. This is a great way to be sure that nothing is stolen from your mailbox by ID thieves, Sign up at informeddelivery.usps.com. Pick up mail as quickly as possible after it's delivered, and always take your outgoing mail directly to the post office. A hot fraud now is scammers stealing checks from mailboxes, erasing the ink, and using them to steal from bank accounts. Your front door. Consider installing a video camera. They are increasingly less expensive, and they're easy to install. If you don't recognize the visitor, don't answer the door. If you find yourself being pressured to buy or donate, have a refusal script ready. Consider taping it near the door that says, "I do not do business at my door. Please leave me something to review. If I'm interested, I'll call you." Be wary of other people posing as utility workers who show up unannounced. Don't allow anyone in your house without an appointment. For garbage, shred any papers that contain private information, financial statements, bills, shipping receipts, before putting them out for pickup. Don't want to invest in a good cross-cut shredder? Many communities have shredding events or permanent drop-off sites. Get in the habit of dropping off your accumulated documents once every few months. Credit cards. Card skimming, in which the criminal affixes a credit card reader on top of a legitimate card reader at a store or gas station, is estimated to cause up to $1 billion in losses annually. When you are paying at a gas station or other point-of-sale location, inspect the device for loose or broken or scratched machinery to make sure someone hasn't tampered with it. If you're unsure, notify the cashier and pay using an alternate method. Credit report. Routinely check yours. Many credit card companies provide it for free. If not, go to annualcreditreport.com or call 1-877-322-8228. That number again, 1-877-322-8228. Watch for unusual activity. If you see any, report it immediately to the appropriate financial institution. Then freeze your credit report. This prevents scammers from opening new credit cards or making big purchases in your name. You can unfreeze it as needed for legitimate transactions. Visit identitytheft.gov for more information on this. Your wallet. Remove cards and information you don't need to carry, such as your Social Security or Medicare card. Make copies of the remaining cards, front and back, and store that in a safe location. Audit your wallet and purse frequently. Take out any unnecessary items that collect and could compromise your personal information if lost, or that would be a hassle to replace. Financial accounts. Create online accounts with each of your financial institutions. Come up with a unique password for each. Then get in the habit of reviewing the transactions lists on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. Be sure you can account for every listed transaction. Spot something odd or incorrect? Immediately report it. Computer. Turn on two-factor authentication for all secure websites you frequent, such as financial institutions or utility companies. Find out how via on its online security center. Then, only someone logged into your phone can receive the code to access those accounts. Yes, still consider subscribing to an antivirus software service. This remains the best protection against new attack methods. Email accounts. Actively designate unsolicited and unwanted email that shows up in your inbox as spam, so future emails from that site will get blocked. Do not open file attachments in emails from businesses or people you don't trust completely. Malware is often planted via email attachments. For discounts on protective plans, visit aarp.org/Norton-identity-theft. Social media. Set your profile so only your friends can see your Facebook page. To do that, click the downward area or arrow button in the upper right-hand corner of your Facebook page. Then click on Settings and Privacy Checkup. This easy-to-use wizard will guide you through the settings. And never accept friend requests from people you don't know or respond to random messages from strangers. Online stores. When typing in a URL, double and triple check the spelling to ensure you are on the correct page. Scammers often use a URL with one letter off from the authentic one in hopes that you won't catch it. Remove your credit card number and information from restaurant delivery and retail store sites. Pay using an e-payment service that keeps credit card info on a highly secure site. Your smartphone. If you have a newer model, turn on biometric identification, fingerprint, or facial recognition. This will help prevent a thief from logging into your phone. Send calls from unknown numbers to voicemail. You can enable this in the phone settings. Make sure your voicemail is set up and not full, so you can receive legitimate messages. Scammers are sending far more bogus texts, often posing as companies you routinely deal with. Never respond to an unsolicited business text. If you think it might be valid, call the organization or go online. And here we have no. Your brain. Learn how to not engage. You are under no obligation in these modern times to respond to calls, emails, or texts from strangers, especially given that so many of them are fraudulent. Learn to say no. Sometimes a caller will get through. Get tough. Say, "I do not do business over the phone. Goodbye." Then hang up without remorse. And trust your instincts. If something doesn't sound right, run it by someone you trust and take extra time to think about it. More on that article next time. Now let's go back to AARP, the magazine, for an article, "My Life Renewed. Rebounding from Tragedy Isn't Easy, but It Is Possible." I first realized that we had a serious problem on a fine spring day when my wife Peggy was driving home from her sister's house. It was an easy 5-mile trip, one she had made hundreds of times. But that day, Peggy got lost. In a panic, she called me from her car. "I can't remember the way. Where do I turn?" Then followed a descent, gradual, then rapid, into severe memory loss and dementia. I've read that some victims of this disease revert to a mindless, childlike state. Poor Peggy went a different direction. Her last years were marked by fear, frustration, and fiery rants often aimed at me. She moved forlornly through a series of memory care facilities. When she died at 73, our children and I agreed it was a blessing. But this blessing left me shattered and bereft. With our kids scattered around the country, I was all alone in the big house Peggy and I had shared for years. My life felt like a country western ballad, lonely and blue. Of course, I knew I wasn't the only 70-something suffering this way, but that didn't provide much comfort. Things got so bad that a nurse from Kaiser Permanente started calling weekly to ask, "How many times in the past 7 days have you contemplated suicide?" A psychologist prescribed antidepressant pills, which didn't help much. What did help, what provided over time a miracle cure, was a more traditional sort of solace, an outpouring of support from my children and friends. It took a while, but they prompted me to move past sorrow and start living again. Just days after they lost their mother, my kids came up with a genius idea. We all went off to stay at the Broadmoor Resort in Colorado Springs, a place Peggy had loved. For the moment, at least, this replaced the sad present with splendid memories of past vacations. It girded us to move on. Not long after that, the kids planned an elaborate family celebration for my 74th birthday, which gave us all something to look forward to. Old friends stepped up as well. My pal Mark, whom I first met in the summer of 1965, called me nearly every day for a year and chatted away about any topic he could think of other than Peggy. I learned that a number of my college classmates had seen their wives succumb to dementia or other illnesses, and we formed a mutually supportive widowers caucus. My longtime skiing partners, Dick and Joe, since we're all well over 65, we call ourselves the Medicare Ski Team, arranged trips around the Rocky Mountain West. In the winter, we skied. In the summer, we pursued our own version of the modern pentathlon, golf, bike riding, billiards, eating, and drinking. And then I made a crucial discovery. Single men in their 70s are in great demand. As word got around that I was alone, something amazing occurred. Women started calling me. Women asked me out. This kind of thing had not happened before. One evening, an attractive 60-ish public health official, recently divorced, invited me over for a home-cooked meal. When dinner was over, she gave me an evocative smile and suggested I spend the night. That kind of thing had definitely never happened before. My friends and my children repeatedly urged me to get out of the house and find ways to keep busy so as not to spend my days mourning the past, and I did. I had been involved in volunteer work in my city for some years, but now I stepped up my charity efforts. When the board chair at the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless stepped down, I agreed to take over. I helped every way I could as the coalition grew. It was time-consuming but totally rewarding. Beyond that, I became the regular imushi, that's the Japanese pronunciation of MC, of the Japan Cup, a competitive competition for Japanese language students at schools and colleges in the Rocky Mountain region. A group of people I vaguely knew from the city, we Coloradans called the People's Republic of Boulder, asked me to work with them on a ballot initiative to guarantee health care for everyone in our state. I brushed this off as a hopeless idealism. It takes 94,000 signatures to get on the ballot in this state, I scoffed. You guys don't have a chance. 3 months ago, later, those same hopeless idealists came back to me and said, we have 154,000 signatures. It's on the ballot. Now, can you help? So I went to work on the initiative campaign. It was an exhausting effort, but it kept me on the go for months and left minimum opportunity to brood about my sorrows. Yes, times were tough for a while, but now I would say my life feels like a different country tune. Bye-bye, blues. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. To be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.